It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 28th day of March 2024. It amazes me, the month of March is almost gone. It seems like only yesterday I was anticipating the Ides of March in a couple of weeks. But here we are, just two broadcast days left in the month of March, four broadcast days left in the month of March altogether, 28th, yeah. Well, let's call it 3 days and a few hours. And this is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. And if you would like to enhance your live listening experience, the live version, yeah, if you're listening right now at headon.live or on any number of platforms that the live stream appears on, but headon.live being the easiest place to simply get the stream. Well, head on over to headon.live and click on chat room and join in the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. Right, okay, and, wait, why is Irish Dave asking no new program today? We're sending. The packets are passing. We were on time. What's going on here? Don't mess with me like that. But anyway, if you pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Irish Dave and Matt in San Francisco and Ralph and Squeaky and Theo. Hi, gang. I hope you enjoy your Thorn in the Side Thursday experience for this 28th day of March. And if you listen via the podcast, if you're part of the podcast crew, well, certainly hope you enjoy that experience today, wherever and however you are, whether you're driving or walking on the treadmill or trying to fall asleep. I'm particularly good at that part. And if you are listening to the podcast, please take a moment wherever you download it and like the podcast, please. Because, you know, the one thing we do not necessarily have absolute control over is the places where this program is posted. And that being the case, the algorithms need to know that this program is being listen to. So like, make sure you subscribe so you'll get notification as each new program goes up. And if you got a minute or so to spare, costs you nothing, but a couple of seconds of your precious finite time, just put in a review or a remark or two to show the algorithms that people are interacting with the podcast as it's placed. Hi, I'm Robin, and well, like I said, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. We have some thorny stuff with which to deal. You know, yesterday we spent most of the time on the shenanigans and skullduggery and perfidy of maggots in the federal court system, but by necessity that meant there were a few things that went unremarked upon. Sometimes when things are unremarked upon, I just say, well, I'm sure the community heard about this somewhere else. You know, like the Trump Bible hustle. But if you'd like to, we can talk this evening about that when we engage in what is called around here conversation radio. But anyway, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we say thank you to our 28th day of the month subscribers. And that means we say thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, and to Suman, and to Mark, and to Sharon. And thank you for being a merry little band of subscribers toward the end of the broadcast month. We don't have much in the way of subscribers for the 29th, the 30th, or the 31st, simply because the presence of February makes it difficult to do anything in terms of PayPal subscriptions after the 28th, really, even with this being a leap year. So here's the basics. We have $650 to go, and thanks so much all month long, every month long, to everyone who helps keep the lights on, the packets passing, the streams streaming, the calls coming in, the lights on here at the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Thank you. But we have $650 to go and 2 days to round it up in so as to finish the month of March fully funded. If we can do that, I can knock out still more bills and make the relentless paying of bills more possible. So that's 10 people at $65 or 65 people at $10 and all the various permutations of that sort of ciphering. And if you want to help out, the PayPal button is at headon.live on the main page. If you'd like to become a Patreon subscriber, it's go to the Contribute tab, and the Patreon link is there. And there's always the U.S. Postal Service. Mail reaches us at The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV, 25801. Please make all checks and money orders. Don't send cash, please. Bad things happen. There are multiple instances along the way between wherever you are and here for ill-intentioned individuals to pinch that. But checks and money orders, please make them payable to Robin Kincaid, Robyn Kincaid, because we've changed our banking. And with the passing of Boss Man Wayne, that meant that we have to do it differently. So, easy enough, Robyn Kincaid, Kincaid. And thank you to Brandon and Fennell from Brooklyn. I actually should have said that the fundraising goal is at $625. $625. So we're only $25 behind for the last 2 days. And if we can make that up, it will make moving into the month of April all the simpler. Oh, hi, Theo. Yeah, that's funny. Mark safe from buying a Bible from the Antichrist today. Isn't that the truth? One person commenting on the Trump Bible hustle. I've been thinking about this. Wasn't the the ruse in, what was it, Paper Moon? The 1970s film with Ryan O'Neal and his daughter Tatum that garnered Tatum O'Neal the youngest Academy Award ever. Wasn't that the hustle in Paper Moon? Wasn't daddy and daughter, weren't they a Bible-selling hustle? I seem to recall that, and that came to mind when I saw that Nitwit Nero was out hustling Bibles. It's a Bible that's had some additions to it. It has the copy of the Constitution in it. Of course, there's no guarantee that that's the actual Constitution. It may be the Pledge of Allegiance to Trump, not that the maggots would ever notice. It's got a handwritten, no word on whether it's a photo reproduction of the handwritten lyrics of Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA. No word on whether it's done in Sharpie and signed by that weird scrawl of Nitwit Nero's that looks like a bunch of one big Klansman and a whole bunch of little Klansmen. But anyway, one observer pointed out that the Trump Bible could have nothing but blank pages in it, and his supporters would never know. That was Amanda Marcotte over at Salon. She said that the announcement of the Trump Bible was a not at all subtle message that he doesn't believe any of this faith in God crap, but he definitely believes in using Christian identity as a weapon to make money and dominate his foes. Going on to say that the maggots can have the Christian identity without all that pesky Jesus-y be kind to the poor and don't crap on people you don't like stuff. No boring church services or Bible study. No tedious talk about compassion and grace, which only gets in the way of the gay bashing and racism. And definitely no need to worry about that Jesus guy with all his notions about loving thy neighbor and welcoming the stranger. She went on to say that the evangelicals have replaced Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, with Nitwit Nero himself. And she said that's really a lot more fun than them, because Trump's message is kick thy neighbor and build the wall. And she added, in the right-wing publishing industry, books are not made to be read. They're to be displayed on your shelves, unopened, so you can glance at them and feel that somewhere a liberal is owned. The point of a Trump-branded Bible is to use it like their dear leader does, as a photo prop, not something to turn to for guidance or wisdom. And she is entirely right in so far as the maggots are not the least bit interested in the message of Jesus H. Christ. Which, since we didn't get to a whole lot of prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday, takes me to something I never thought I'd read. The headline, Texas Bishop slams Greg Abbott, says Christians have duty to resist. What? And that's apparently true, it's true, it's true. The bishop in question is Bishop Mark Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z, of the Diocese of El Paso. He was on the lecture circuit giving a talk at Fairfield University. Hello, Darlene. Fairfield is a Jesuit institution. The National Catholic Reporter had the story, and Seitz apparently told those in attendance, "You've seen the Humvees and the concertina wire and the National Guardsmen on the television," and said that everything Greg Abbott is doing and the other maggots in Texas, all those things are transparently political, a broader, brutal, historical project in Texas to criminalize and police people who migrate. Noting that, he said people of faith have a duty to resist these racist projects. Here's the punchline. Mark Seitz is the chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Office of Migration. And they're in charge for Catholic policies regarding things like advocacy and education, refugee resettlement, and making sure that, well, to reach out to the migrant community with specialized services to at-risk and vulnerable populations, according to the Newsweek account, including victims of trafficking and unaccompanied minors. Now, that's shocking, given so far, insofar as, for as long as I can remember, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has been a vulgar right-wing hate machine. But then again, as I read it, I thought, huh, Bishop Seitz, now do the LGBTQ people. Do that. Do you still feel like it's a racist, that everything Abbott is doing is a racist project regarding, oh, LGBTQ migrants? Because some of the migrants, without a doubt, are fleeing their home countries because of the blatant homophobia and transphobia in their own countries. We've seen court cases develop of trans women trying to stay in the United States because being sent back to their home country is a sentence of certain death. And this bears mentioning during Transgender Week of Visibility. Somehow I don't think it would be the same. I'd love to be proven wrong. But this Mark Seitz guy has even gone so far as to slam the attorney, the recently given a pass crooked Attorney General of Texas. Of course, that would be Ken Paxton, who got a sweetheart deal after having been charged with three felonies, for which he will now never stand trial. Seitz, however, took note of the fact that Paxton has been trying to defund something called Annunciation House, which is a shelter run by the Roman Catholic diocese for migrant people, that vicious animal Paxton has accused it of facilitating illegal entry into the United States, harboring illegal migrants, engaging in human smuggling, and operating a stash house. A stash house. And recently, a district court judge in Texas said that the AG was engaging in his nasty-ass jihad without regard to due process or fair play. The attack on Annunciation House, according to Bishop Seitz, is an escalation in Texas's efforts in recent years to militarize the border, you know, in direct contravention of the Constitution of the United States, but who's paying attention to that little pamphlet anymore? And to enact legislation criminalizing migration and people who migrate. Why didn't he say men and women and children who migrate? I can almost hear Joanne Rowling now, or Robert Galbraith, or whatever they call themselves. In his address at Fairfield, he said, "I'm very disappointed in the narrative that is being promoted to this day that people who are fleeing to our border are a threat to us in the first place. It's just a tremendous misunderstanding of what's happening." I would say that is overly gentle. These filthy maggots don't misunderstand anything. They hate brown people, as well as LGBTQ plus people, as well as black people, as well as indigenous people, as well as Asian people, as well as anybody who is not within the ambit of what they consider to be white. Well, you know, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. Even when that blind hog is Holy Mother Church. And Stephen New York says, taking the Bible off the shelf and holding it up, you forgot about holding it upside down. That sounds like something a heathen or a pagan would do. Well, and of course, Nitwit Nero, back when that happened, he is a pagan and a heathen. He was being interviewed by, Mark Halperin. Remember Mark Halperin used to show up on our Filthy Morning Habit all the time, pontificating and offering his conservative viewpoints, until it came out that he was a serial sexual harasser. Well, I'll be quite candid. I have never caught myself wondering what he was up to. But it turns out he's out there on some platform interviewing, well, Nitwit Nero. I guess he's gone full maggot. And I saw a clip of him asking Nitwit Nero, "Well, what's your favorite Bible verse?"
"I like all of them. There are so many verses that mean so much to so many people that it would be unfair for me to have a favorite one."
The shortest verse in the Bible is Jesus wept. And he couldn't even come up with that. He couldn't come up with "do unto others as they would have you, as you would have them do unto you." He couldn't come up with "for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should have, should not die, but should have everlasting life." He couldn't come up with, God knows, "study to show thyself approved." We all know.
"Well, I just think everybody should own a Trump Bible. There should be one of these in every home for the low, low price of $60 or three payments of $19.95. But we'll get that last 15 cents one way or the other. We'll take it out in shipping, you rubes."
As to the Bible, Flavio said, "Gideon would like a word. Trump should try that hustle with the Quran, and as you elaborated, one with a genuine pigskin cover. See how long he lasts." Trump's favorite book, Stephen New York says, "I'd love for someone to ask him if he liked Paul's letter to the Lilliputians."
My personal favorite is Third Flip-Floppians. And I like that verse where it says, women, be subservient and submissive to your man and let him grab you by the pussy.
I probably shouldn't be starting the program turning my own stomach. And everyone else's. Well, I guess there went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. But I wanted to go back to some to another piece of correspondence. Oh, and just for the record, now that Lee Greenwood has associated himself, and you know there were some rights involved and some pieces of silver passed from one hand into the hands of another, I have long despised that song, God Bless the USA. It's one of those things that kind of makes me not go to 4th of July, the 4th of July fireworks celebrations, because without fail, it'll be part of the finale rack, which is just gross. But it is so, it's so, I'm glad Jesus is white like me that it just turns my stomach. I wonder, says Matt in San Francisco, if someone could talk Trump into selling pictures of Muhammad.
And for the MAGA Muslims, here we have this beautiful velvet painting of the man I like to call Big Mo. Handcrafted in Pakistan.
No.
Each painting lovingly hand-painted on black velvet in a sweatshop in a Trump sweatshop in Guangdong Free Trade Province in my dear friend, President for Life, Xi Jinping's, I don't know why I didn't get to be President for Life, China.
But to go back to a piece of correspondence that I got from Cynthia, and thank you for taking time to write, Cynthia. I do appreciate it. I missed most of yesterday's show live, but streaming it later, and I'm still not through it all. I heard you talking with Darlene about book banning and the difficulty young LGBTQ people, and especially trans people, have when trying to just find info to help them understand themselves and who they are. And you mentioned you would not presume to speak for me, but you could have. I knew from my very first memories that something was wrong, and I should have been a girl. And when I was old enough to read, I went to the library looking for info and found nothing. I remember reading a column from Ann Landers back around 1966 or so, where a transvestite wrote to her to try and educate her, and she smacked him down and belittled him for it. That did nothing for my own self-worth, and if anything, added to my suicidal thoughts. Even in college, in the early 70s, all I could find in the library was stuff calling me a deviant. And I didn't feel like a deviant. I wasn't ever out to hurt anyone. But I was sure being hurt by that. I felt completely unwanted by society. And of course, I lived in fear of being found out, like you can't imagine. Except I'm totally sure you can imagine. Yeah. So yes, Robin, you can speak for me. Our experiences are so much the same. Cynthia, I feel in so many ways like you are truly my big sister. The one I never had. Because quite frankly, I have one. But, well, That ship sailed and sunk in a certain bay. So thank you. Kenda in Missouri with a note. Once I remember where I hid Gmail. There it is. Oh my goodness, the dinosaurs are squawking in the yard. Sounds like the turkey and a few roosters and hens and guinea fowl and ducks have come over. I got to go for a walk over the acre here and find where they're laying their eggs, because you just know they are. And I mean, they're foraging and eating the worms in my grass and stuff. I might as well get an omelet out of it, right? But I got a note from Kenda in Missouri. Lee Greenwood, Mike Huckabee Bible. Oh, I have a feeling this is going to be gross. Yeah, there he is. Pastor, brother, minister, governor, former presidential candidate, and diabetes bullshit snake oil cure salesman, Mike Huckabee. On the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Hustling the Trump Bible. Good Lord.
Now, Lee Greenwood is a country music superstar.
Is he really?
Just 7 number one hits, including one of the most beloved songs of the entire 20th century.
Is it really?
The patriotic anthem, God Bless the USA. His latest project, give him a hand for it. Never been a song like that before.
No,
his
never.
His project is pretty special. It's the God Bless the USA.
Never been a song like that before. Oh, heavens no. I mean, it's not like it's not like Kate Smith didn't make a career out of bellowing God Bless America for like 100 years or something. No. It's not like the Battle Hymn of the Republic doesn't contain the words, in the glory of the lilies, somewhere across the sea, Christ was born, yada, 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 to die for you and me. If he could die to make men holy, we can die to make him free, and his truth is marching on. No, there's never been a song like Huckabee, like God Bless the USA. And so there's Mike Huckabee holding. I swear, this thing may actually be. Nah, that would be too expensive. This is a hustle, remember? But it sure looks like it's covered in fine Corinthian pigskin.
A Bible, which is a beautiful limited edition book that combines the Bible with America's divinely inspired founding documents.
Which really are at odds with each other. Because there's no reference to the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, God, Jehovah, Yahweh, whatever. Nature and nature's God gets a cameo in the Declaration of Independence. But, well, even the word faith doesn't show up in the Constitution because it was written by men who weren't much into faith, who were into, well, what people like Benny Drywife Shapiro now and Joe Rogan and others brute as facts over feelings. But it was Huckabee, being a Baptist minister, has to say that it was divinely inspired. Imagine the divine inspiring these documents whilst at the same time not insisting on any credit in it. What an asshole.
It is an honor to welcome back everybody's favorite. Would you please put your hands together for Lee Greenwood?
Put your hands together for Lee Greenwood. Does that mean we're supposed to pray to him? I thought there was something in that book about idols. Well, then again, like Amanda Marcotte said, that book could be full of blank pages and the maggots would never notice. This would be funny, says Steve in New York. Trump kosher hams just in time for Passover. Don't put it past him. I mean, this is just the latest in a long string of grifts. Trump water. Trump steaks, a man who sold meat through the mail. Trump vodka, after his buddy Vladdy introduced Putinka vodka. And a famous teetotaler then who would know nothing about the quality or flavor or lack thereof. It was probably just warehouse bottles of rubbing alcohol. As Andy Griffith noted, we like to add a little lighter fluid for flavor. I should probably have issued the hockey puck warning before I ran this clip.
You know, my first thought is to say, Lee Greenwood, you've written some great songs. Now you're trying to write the Bible, huh? What are you doing here?
You know, the odd thing, Governor, is that this is the only first time I've ever come on a show, a TV show, and not sang.
I think it's ridiculous that you would come on a show and not do music, but you know what?
But I have an important message.
You have a great message.
Thank you.
Let's talk
from
about
your sponsor.
I mean, that's pretty cool because it combines documents of the country, Word of God. Where did the idea come from?
Yeah, well, word of God.
I think it's important that everybody has a Bible. I hope you do. And
good point.
Because you just know Lee reads his every day.
We've got three, actually. My wife has her own Bible. I have mine that sits by my bedside. And then we have the...
And the little ring of dust around it by the bedside is about a couple of centimeters thick. Yeah, because... His wife has her Bible and he has his because men's and women's Bibles, they're biological Bibles.
The family Bible, which has inscribed in history of the family and so forth. And I think that's important to keep. This particular Bible, however, is an inspiration of my team. And that is, we wanted to make sure that people who have this Bible learn about...
Trump Bible. This is the God Bless the USA Bible from 2 years ago. Lee Greenwood is the guy from Paper Moon. Jesus Christ. Thanks, Kenda. He's got a Bible hustle for every... He'll partner with anybody as long as he gets a cut. And I mentioned how problematic that dumb song makes the 4th of July. Well, if you think about rights and intellectual property and the like, and how often and how many different places that song gets played over the Independence Day weekend, hell, he probably makes a killing just by people playing that shitty record. Once a year. America. What a country. Greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God. Amen. A corollary, Steve in New York says, to Matt's Muhammad Trump photo from Trump, With Muhammad dressed like Elvis in a white jumpsuit. And speaking of which, because I mentioned Velvet Elvis Muhammad, by the way, does that make me an infidel for even talking about it? If you make them think about it, does that constitute something horrid? Ah, religion. It'll eventually be the end of humanity. But I've been noticing, because Steve from Georgia Stan and I have a penchant for paying attention to ads. And I've noticed a couple of pharmaceutical ads during the mornings. I may have mentioned this. I don't know. But I saw one that says that the side effects of one drug may be redness at the injection site, bad taste. And the minute I saw that, I looked at it and said, really? You use this drug and the next thing you're going to walk through the door and say, honey, look at this velvet painting of a bunch of dogs playing poker. Isn't this just wonderful? And I got a bullfighter and an Elvis to go with it, and we'll just hang the whole damn triptych on the living room wall. I think it's wonderful. And she says, honey, I think you're going to have to get off that drug. You've got that side effect. It's giving you bad taste. And so now, with the FDA approval of a drug called Mounjaro, which frankly sounds like a character from an Edgar Rice Burroughs novel, irony is dead, y'all. The warnings at the end of that ad said, Mounjaro should not be used by people with a history of type 1 diabetes and children. And as someone who has done copywriting in the past, and as a practitioner of the art of word knowing, my pink little ears perked right up. And I said, wait, did you just hear that? And then I said, yeah. And I said, well, a side effect of taking Mounjaro is children? One minute you're type 2 diabetic, and the next minute you've got the Brady Bunch? I don't know. Maybe. Watch for the Mounjaro ad. You'll see what I mean. Or if you've got children, you shouldn't take Mounjaro. People with type 1 diabetes and children should not take Mounjaro. Well, okay. A little explanation would help. Subject line, so much for separation of church and state. Lou says, clearly ignorance is bliss. And now we've got the marketing wheels really spinning. Lou said, Trump endorsed orange prison suits, perfect for every prisoner, an American flag on each sleeve. Maybe it could be an orange prison jumpsuit with an American flag motif throughout the very weave of the fabric, Lou. Take this back to the design team and workshop it a little bit, would you? Hi, Matt. First cowbell of the evening. Matt says, Lee Greenwood, well, my Bible's next to my bed. Matt said, my wife's is next to her dildo. No, her dildo's next to the Bible. Never mind. No, honey, I don't want to read your Bible. I'll just sit here and not read mine. Christopher in Oregon. Huckleberry, Huckstery, Hee-Haw, Reprise, Rip-Off Hour. Special guest star, Lee Greenwood. So in Nitwit Nero's new rip-off Bible, Jeebus is replaced by Lee Greenwood. So old Lee dines exclusively with men and wears dresses every day of his life. Oh, crazy Daves! We need a special order cross for old Leo to pogo stick up onto. Can you get it done in time for Easter? See if you can get Gladys to expedite it, would you? Jesus. No, Roxanne, says Ralphs. Fine Corinthian leather. No. And by the way, in order to help us knock down fundraising, and this would get us down to 575. A $25 challenge in honor of the Coors workers. Molson Coors offers workers 5 cents an hour increase. Contract negotiations collapse in Texas. They deserve more than a 99-cent raise, Ralph says. Grr. You know, stories like this make me glad that I have eschewed the consumption of beer. The Dateline Fort Worth, Texas, from PR Newswire, negotiations with Molson Coors broke off on Thursday over the multi-billion dollar beer maker's refusal to agree to real wage increases for Teamsters in a new three-year contract. Members of Teamsters Local 997 continue to hold the strike line 24/7 at the Fort Worth Brewery as a nationwide boycott of Molson Coors products continues. In negotiations today that had a mediator involved, Molson Coors offered just 5 more cents per hour in its wage proposal to the workers who brew and package its signature beers. For months, Molson Coors had not budged from its original degrading offer of 99 cents per hour raises. Since workers were forced onto the picket line 41 days ago, Molson Coors CEO Gavin Hattersley has been paid more than $5.1 million in just 41 days. Molson Coors is a total disgrace. This isn't a serious offer from one of America's biggest beer companies. It's an example of the willful disrespect it has for the American workers behind its products. Molson Coors doesn't care about Texas workers or their hard labor or the sacrifices their families have made to make the company rich. The corporate endgame here is to try to drive the union out of the brewery in Texas. Molson Coors wants to break the workers, said Teamsters General President Sean M. O'Brien. Let me be clear, the Teamsters aren't going anywhere. We will fight as hard and for as long as it takes to protect our members and get the wages they deserve. It shouldn't be difficult for Molson Coors to agree to a respectable contract unless their goal is to deprive workers of fair wages and strip them of good benefits and job protections. And that's the thing. Remember, products like beer and cigarettes, so-called sin products, even in the worst of economic times, they continue to make money. Distilleries, breweries, vineyards, because especially when times go bad, and they're not that bad now, the economy is roaring like it has, like it hasn't in ages under Joe Biden, wages aren't keeping pace because, well, billionaires exist. But even in hard times, products like Molson Coors exist and thrive. They brought in $12 billion last year. They have the nerve to sit across from us, O'Brien said, at the bargaining table and offer workers who made them that money a nickel more in wages. We can't even call this an offer. It's spitting in the face of each of the 420 Teamsters in Texas who make this company and its executives obscenely wealthy. No, that wasn't O'Brien. That was Jeff Padalero, director of the Teamsters Brewery, Bakery, and Soft Drink Conference. And being that Molson Coors is a major sponsor of March Madness, the Teamsters are going to be out in Dallas-Fort Worth, Detroit, Los Angeles, Boston, and Phoenix, educating the public on what they're doing when they buy Molson Coors products. Good for them. The Teamsters of Local 997 had to go on strike February 17th after Molson refused to negotiate in anything resembling good faith. The Teamsters want pay raises, improved retirement benefits, and to maintain the good health care benefits that Teamsters have. So, if someone will jump in with $25, Ralph's will double it. You know, Ralph's is there so many days during the month with a challenge, and it is such a help when it's met. And it would be great if this one was met quickly, as we're almost to the end of the first hour of the program. And like I said, that would get us down to $575 to go. Manjaro, Flavio says they had to alter the spelling slightly because Manjaro, M-A-N-J-A-R-O, is an Arch Linux-based Linux distribution. Yeah, I think there's an extra vowel in there or something. But that drug's going to take off because it's been FDA approved for weight loss for people for whom weight loss is a critical health crisis. Emilio said, if those products are sinful, then I don't want to be saintly. No, just find a different beer that isn't run by union busting assholes. Which is another great argument for, well, at least drinking nothing but Spotted Cow and New Glarus brewing products if you're in Wisconsin. Billable Rick, Trump's latest promo. Scotty from San Diego has told me about Trump's latest promo from the great beyond. A clock depicting a monkey with a pencil, green eye shades, and working a math problem, looking at Jesus and saying, Jesus, what time is it? And Jesus, meanwhile, looking at the clock and saying, Jesus, would you look at the time? Exactly, Billable. Emilio, if you're planning to have children that have type 2 diabetes, Manjaro may be for you. Ask your doctor. It's going to be a thorny thorn in the side Thursday. And since we're talking about beer and whatnot. Well, Willie Nelson, who hosts Willie Nelson's 4th of July picnic, and Willie Nelson being the consummate Texan in a good way, it's a mega concert that's been going on for almost 50 years, hosted by the national treasure and country icon. Well, this July, it's leaving Texas and headed to Camden, New Jersey, in an open-air amphitheater just across the Delaware River from Philadelphia. Bob Dylan will be playing, Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, Maren Morris, Mavis Staples, and Solis. Willie's Instagram page says, join Willie and his friends on Independence Day in the birthplace of America. In the past, It's gone to Tulsa, Oklahoma, Kansas City, Atlanta. Went to South Bend in 2009. But for the past 10 years, with the exception of the pandemic, it's been held in Austin, Texas. And Willie, may he live forever, is 90. And he's been creating music and art for over 60 years. But not in Texas this year. The news article I'm looking at doesn't say anything about the viciousness of Greg Asbot and Ken Paxton and the like. But Willie is known as a hardcore progressive. And it would be nice if it was the case that he was getting out of there just to make sure that Take's ass didn't get any tax revenues out of it. And just because this is peak West Virginia, leaving Texas, make West Virginia governor, make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice, who just lost his helicopter because he doesn't pay his taxes, a billionaire. Huh, that's true. Ralph says, may Willie Nelson live longer than Lee Greenwood. I think he may already have done that. I don't see Lee Greenwood toddling out on stage at 90 to hawk another Bible. Well, now, Governor Jumbo Justice just recently vetoed a bill here in the Mountain State that would have expanded, solar energy production. The bill had been called HB 5528 and would have expanded the size of solar plants that the two power companies here in West Virginia, my personal bete noir, Appalachian Power, AEP, and their antiquated coal-fried power grid, as well as Monongahela Power, Mon Power. Well, the bill would have doubled the amount of solar plants that they could own from 50 megawatts to 100. And the original ceiling of 200 megawatts per utility would stay where it was. He issued a veto letter, Jumbo Justice did, saying, I fear this well-intentioned bill will further encourage these companies to drop coal-generated power and continue to turn toward more expensive options outside of West Virginia. In no way, shape, form, or fashion do I want the ripple effect of such drastic and rapid change to lead to West Virginians paying more on their power bills as these entities try to pass their cost increases down the chain to the consumer. It could also lead to job loss by putting coal mines that I own and generating facilities that Joe Manchin owns out of business quickly. I added a couple of things there, but they're true statements. My favorite part of all that is that
As these entities try to pass their cost increases down the chain to the consumer, I can hardly turn around in this state without seeing another damn news story about Appalachian Power and Mon Power going with their with tears running down their pathetic faces, hat in hand, wringing their pearls and clutching their hands, to beg the Public Service Commission to let them soak the hillbillies a little bit more. And the Public Service Commission always says, well, shucks, it's okay, sugar, there. And Pat gives them little head pats and says, we'll get you some more money from the rubes, I mean rate payers. He's so transparently crooked. He is not trans neither. What an asshole. He wants to be senator, the junior senator from West Virginia. Well, I'm going to stay behind Zach Shrewsbury. I'll vote for him in the Democratic primary, and if he doesn't win, I will vote for whomever the Democrat is in November. Unless somehow or another, you know, Joe Manchin decides to run after him, but it's too late for that shit. I Emilio. Who doesn't like a solid entity? So, we are just now, well, about two minutes ago, past the first hour of the program, the Filler Rockster. And I should add that if there's something on your mind, feel free to chime in. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. You can reach me also at 304-574-8178, as well as Skype, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, and they will all get you easily into the program. Of course, since Nitwit Nero's hustling Bibles now, more and more people are opining on the manifest hypocrisy of hustling Bibles during so-called Holy Week. And among those is Liz Cheney, who, when she found out that he had gotten into the Bible racket, went over to that website formerly known as Twitter and posted, Happy Holy Week, Donald. Instead of selling Bibles, you should probably buy one and read it, including Exodus 20:14. Now, for those of us who have not memorized the entire Bible, Exodus 20:14 reads, thou shalt not commit adultery. Oh, okay, I'm a little clearer now. So it was 2 years ago that Lee Greenwood was hustling his God Bless USA Bibles, because of course Nitwit Nero has never had an original idea in his entire misbegotten, misanthropic, miserable existence. And so basically what he did is he got in on the dodge with Lee Greenwood to try to clear out the backlog of Lee Greenwood's Bibles.
in exchange for a cut of the action, you know, for, as it, the line from Godfather 2 notes, wetting his beak.
It's my favorite book. I'm proud to endorse and encourage you to get this Bible. We must make America pray again. Religion and Christianity are the biggest things missing from this country. And I truly believe that we need to bring them back and have to bring them back fast. I think it's one of the biggest problems we have. That's why our country is going haywire. We've lost religion in our country.
The Hill, in its reporting, says the $60 King James Bible will include lyrics from God Bless the USA. But it already does, because he's been pimping it, Lee Greenwood has, for at least 2 years. God. And the maggots will fall for anything. But Lee Greenwood is upset. Oh, yes, he is. Now that people are burning him and his and his business partner, Nitwit Nero, to the ground over it. He gave an interview today to Bianca De La Garza of Newsmuck and said that the criticism, I think it's just from the Trump haters. I don't even believe people on the left hate religion. It's just the Trump haters is all. So wait, people on the left aren't Trump haters? Anybody want to help me sort this one? And we've been promoting this Bible for over 3 years. Ah, so because the president, he's not the president, Lee, has also asked the nation to pray and use that particular Bible. I mean, he could have used any Bible at all, but because it has the documents of our founding fathers, I think that makes it unique. And I'm definitely getting a cut. I hope. I hope he doesn't stiff me like he stiffs everybody else. He wouldn't do that, would he? Yeah. Yeah, Lee, he will. The gang over at The View had a little something to offer on it as well. Whoopi Goldberg said, okay, I don't know. Anybody? Joy Behar said the last time he was on his knees, he was picking up a French fry. Talking about Nitwit Nero. And then she added that, you know, Michael Cohen said that his former boss once told him that the pastors who had laid hands on him were just hustlers. The rest of the panel said things like it was pandering. And Sarah Haynes said, you guys remember the unforgettable tweet about the taco bowls where it was Happy Cinco de Mayo? The best taco bowls are made in Trump Tower Grill. I love Hispanics. So there's that. And Elisa Farah Griffin, who herself actually worked for Orange Julius Geezer in the White House, said, he's selling these for $60, and I'm a Christian, and as soon as I heard that price tag, I think of the persecuted church Christians around the world who risked their lives to have one page of the Bible, to be able to read Scripture in places like China, Saudi Arabia, Syria, where you can't practice your faith openly. You know, there's a lot of things you can't be openly in Saudi Arabia. But Elisa Farah Griffin doesn't have any time for those. It's just the people who can't read the Bible. She said, and he's using it to profit off of, like, that tells you all you need to know about the man. Sonny Hostin said, it's blasphemous. So hopefully we have covered as much of as much of the Trump Bible business as needs be. So let's move over to something a different level of stupid. Enter MAGOT Michigan State Representative Matt Maddock, who apparently is a big March Madness fan. And he went to X and posted an excrement last night. In his excrement, he featured a photograph of a plane landing at Detroit Metro Airport, the airport with the trippy tunnel, I might add, and said, "Happening right now." Wrong accent, Roxanne. Happening right now. Three buses just loaded up with illegal invaders at Detroit Metro. Anyone have any idea when where they're headed with their police escort? It was the Gonzaga men's basketball team. And they're in the Sweet 16. And it's being held in Detroit. Maxwell White of WXYZ Detroit said, "Just to be clear, this was the Gonzaga basketball team. Photos show Gonzaga getting on an Allegiant plane to Detroit for the Sweet 16. The flight radar shows a plane from GEG to DTW landed at 7:25 p.m. around the time this photo was posted." This is a wild tweet. Eric Swalwell out in California got hold of it and said, "Hey Einstein, your state's hosting the Sweet 16. Could it be a team bus? If it is, will you resign for your spectacular stupidity?" Mallory McMorrow, a state senator in Michigan and a damn fine legislator, said, "A sitting state representative sees a group of buses at the airport and immediately yells, 'Illegal invaders!' which is a pretty rude and also, frankly, dangerous way to greet the Gonzaga men's basketball team arriving for March Madness." And one of his own followers said, explained to him it was Gonzaga, and he said, "Sure, commie, good talking point." And apparently spelled commie, K-O-M-M-I-E. You know, if it weren't for the change in climate, you could take all the good, decent, liberal progressives in Alabama and swap them for all the maggots in Michigan, and Michigan would be an even more amazing place. But I don't think I want to do that because there's something happening in Alabama. I don't know if you noticed or not. But a woman whose last name is Lands, in a special election to fill a seat in the Alabama House of Representatives, absolutely kicked ass on her maggot opponent. She's from the greater Huntsville, Alabama area. You know, the place where Space Camp is. And she campaigned primarily on abortion care access and the Alabama Supreme Court's entirely predictable ruling on clusters of literally five cells being children. And she beat, the people in that district showed up to the polls. They had an unusually high turnout in that district, and they turned out to vote for Ms. Lands, now to be Representative Lands. And replaced a maggot seat with a Democrat seat. It just may be a harbinger of things to come. It just may be a confirmation of what President Biden said when he looked at least the members of the Supreme Court who had the nerve to show up at the State of the Union and said, y'all said that women have political power. You're about to find out. And somewhere in Washington, D.C., old Balls and Strikes Roberts, the most brilliant evil genius of the Republican Party, when the news of the victory in Alabama came, said, son of a God, what do I got to do? Of course, when the Supremes trashed Roe v. Wade via Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, the backstory was that old Balls and Strikes was trying to get a slightly more moderate ruling, but the We Hate Women camp was being run by Sammy Bad Breath Alito and his best buddy Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas, both of them being two of the most corrupt individuals ever to hold a seat on the Supreme Court. And they carried the day such that there were only three outright dissensions from Dobbs and one single dissent with that famous second line, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. And by the way, a couple of remarks from Brother Deacon Asa. Trump's favorite part of the Bible is that part where the two hot daughters get daddy all plastered and bang him while the filthy pillar assault watches and cheers on. Prove me wrong. Well, you're not wrong. And a little bit ago, oh, don't mention Governor Justice the Hutt and the titties in the same sentence. What? Why? Why y'all gotta be this way? Oh, let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Thanks for your patience. Hey, how you doing? Welcome to the program.
Hello, Robin. It's Ken.
Well, hey, Ken. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I'll meet Ralph's this challenge.
Thank you.
I'll put the money in the basket when I get back.
Well, thank you so much. You just got us down to 575 to go.
Well, you're very welcome. We need you. I don't listen live anymore because I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm an alcoholic. So, I just kind of detox.
That takes Hey, Ken, that takes courage to say, and I want to lift you up. And there are a lot of people in recovery in the Horn Family Community Congregation.
Yeah, I do know that, and that's, I'm looking for that support.
And I think they'll be here for you with love and grace and an absolute boatload of understanding.
Yeah, and I'm glad Joe Lieberman's dead.
Hold on. Stop it. Wait. We just had I'm just going to come right out and say it. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad Joe Lieberman's dead. That's not usually what you get in the meeting. Yeah, hi, my name's Ken. My life's become unmanageable. No, hi, my name's Ken. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad Joe Lieberman's dead. Wait a minute. That may be the first AA cowbell in the history of this program, my friend.
Yeah, that's shit, Weasel. I mean, way back since Biden picked him to be VP, like, ugh. I always hated that mofo.
I remember all the way back to those days. Ken, I was a I was considerably younger.
Too. Yeah.
And I was still working in the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to my best buddy at the office and saying, you know, I got a feeling this is going to fuck this election.
It did, right? I don't know. Well, I held my nose and voted for, you know, Biden. Gore.
But the problem is, they always say, you know, nobody votes for the vice president. I think there were a lot of people who voted against Joe Lieberman. It was like having Droopy the dog on the ticket.
Yeah.
And he was such such a holier than thou POS out there criticizing Clinton over a matter that was solely between Clinton and Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Monica Lewinsky. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason he came to be known as Holy Joe. And I want to share this with you real quick, Ken, because Ralph just wrote in and said, please tell Ken that I've been sober since September 1990. And Matt said, Ken can sit by me at the meetings. I told you there's a lot of love out there.
Yeah, this is my second go around. But this time I'm deadly serious, because if I take another drink, I'm going to die. Or worse, have another stroke and be a freaking vegetable. I don't need that. I don't want that.
You never know. You never know who you're helping when you say things like this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was back in '93 when I tried to get the AA for about 3 months, and I went back off the wagon. And 20 years of hard drinking later, it's really messing me up, you know, physically. Mentally, and it ain't worth it.
No, we much prefer you continuing to be a member of the community.
Oh, I will.
I want to apologize, Ken, because of the way you, and I'm not criticizing, but the way you phrased it, mm-hmm. I'm not listening live anymore, and then you say what you said, and if I was contributing to your lack of sobriety, I sincerely apologize.
No, that's not it at all. I just, most of the meetings I go to, well, lately, are at night. So, but I get to listen to you and go to sleep and listen to your developed voice.
I think I finally found my purpose. Putting America to sleep with Roxanne Kincaid.
No, it's just calming, and I get to listen to it a couple times, let it all sink in. I'm freaking nervous now.
You're fine.
I don't know why. I don't know why. It's like first time I called you. You probably noticed a couple times I called. I was probably swearing pretty good.
If you were, I wasn't.
Yeah.
It's not something I listen for.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth, people have called this program a lot more intoxicated than whatever you are. Without naming names.
Yeah. Well, I probably wouldn't have called if I was that fucking shit-faced.
It has not slowed some individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a reason some people refer to those things as liquid courage.
Yeah. Bullshit. Just masking. I mean, yeah. Bullshit. So I got a sponsor who's younger than me, which is kind of weird. Got tattoos, and but he did the work, did the, you know, needle drugs and every kind of drug. But he's been in and out of the program, kind of like I, but I just didn't go back. But now, deadly serious. No pun intended.
I get it.
I don't know what to say now. Let's rag on Lieberman some more.
Well, it's interesting because you got a note from Dave in the Blind. Subject line, keep going, Ken. There are a lot of us pulling for you, Ken. The commitment is going to be great, and the challenges are going to be hard, but I believe in you. Now, on to the less serious stuff. Joe Lieberman singing with the Bleeding Choir Eternal, the worst presidential decision President Gore, Vice President Gore made, was having Joe Lieberman as his running mate. You never put someone of the opposite party on your ticket, even calling it a unity ticket. You say, but Dave,
yeah.
Lieberman was a Democrat. Bullshit. He was as much a Democrat as King Joe is. Good riddance to them both.
You know, I seem to remember that he declared himself as an independent because he wanted to keep his little
Senate
sweet,
seat. Right. When the
do-nothing job.
Yeah. I didn't get a harumph out of the guy.
Watch your ass.
That's beautiful. It's like call and response. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Watch your ass. good riddance to them both. Joe Lieberman pineapple stand, Dave says, will open soon. Your buddy Dave in the Blind.
Not that. They want to do a special edition crucifix for him.
Yeah, instead of INRI over the top of the crucifix, just a picture of Droopy the dog. I know, we're not supposed to be mean.
Oh, I like Droopy.
Well, I do too, but I didn't want him to be president. Or within a heartbeat thereof.
Yeah, honestly, when I tuned into my filthy morning habit today, it was like, oh God, it's going to be like this all day long, isn't it? An inconsequential man who unfortunately had tremendous consequence relative to the health and safety of lots of people all around the world. It can arguably be said that Joe Lieberman had a hand in the slaughter of 1 million innocent Iraqi civilians.
Yep.
Because after he had been the vice presidential nominee and played his part in ruining the candidacy of Al Gore, he went back into the Senate, and just as quick as it was time to time to slaughter some innocent Muslims, and by the way, the one of the oldest Christian communities on earth, the Iraqi Christians. He was there hopping up and down with veins in his teeth, yelling, kill, 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 supporting Dim Leader and Darth Cheney's bloodthirsty slaughter in the sandbox.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a full hagiography on today's TV.
It was gross.
I bet. Yeah, that's why I didn't turn it on. I was thrown up.
And Emilio just
or wanted to drink again.
Emilio just pointed out something that's unfortunately obvious, asking, is Droopy the illegitimate dog of Truman Capote? Because Droopy sounds a lot like my Truman Capote impression, which is unfortunate. Probably not wrong, Emilio. Well, let me ask you, is spring beginning to poke her bonneted head through the soil of winter up there in Erie?
Yep. The yellow plant thing, tree thing in the back is blooming.
Well, you know, that's a sure sign. That's a sure
maple.
That's a sure sign of spring, Dave, when the yellow plant thing in the backyard begins to bloom. I think there was a 50s.
I don't know what you call it.
There was a 50. There was a bad 50s horror movie came called The Yellow Plant Thing Came from the Backyard.
Yeah, well, then the maples just started blooming. I see some red buds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still freaking cold.
Oh, yeah, I think the high today was like 48 here. We had blue skies with white puffy clouds, and they were skating along, and, oh, it was breezy. Because I had to go to the post office today, so that meant going to Beckley. And then I got my face electrocuted for a little bit, and that was a lot of fun. By the way, thank you so much to Kat and Ahia. The vacuum sealing unit arrived just in time for Easter dinner. So something's getting sous-vided for Easter.
What is that exactly? You're just marinating in a like a sealed bag?
No. You use the vacuum thing to pull all the air out of the bag and seal it tight. But then the sous vide machine is like a metal cylinder, and it's got a clamp on it, and it clamps onto the side of the pot, or you can even use a BPA-free plastic container. It needs to be at least, I think, 12 quarts. But you fill it with water, and you put the unit in it, and it's got a microprocessor in it, and you set it for the time and the temperature that you want. You turn it on. It heats the water to that temperature and will hold it there pretty much as long as it's got sufficient water in it. And you put your whatever you're sous-viding into it, and the water circulates and holds at the same temperature uniformly throughout the pot. It's like we did two chicken breasts at 140 degrees for 2 hours per the instruction of Brother Deacon Asa, and they just come out so juicy and wonderful. And the same for those briskets I did. And I don't know what I'm going to do for Easter. Well, you know, in my case it'll be the dinner I cook for Trans Day of Visibility and my mom's birthday. And it's just heavenly, because once you take it back out and you go out on the grill, or you use the griddle, like a griddle on your stove or whatever, and you put a little sear on it, and it's perfect. It's absolutely delicious. It's been a game changer for me. And thank you, Cynthia, for the sous vide machine.
That sounds great.
Apparently it was a method developed by the French, of course.
Oh, wow, then it's not so cool.
No, it's delicious.
I gotta, get ready to go here, go to another meeting. And hopefully I get to talk to you again soon. And I'll pay you when I get back. Okay.
Listen, you're not paying me, but thank you. Thank you.
I mean, I'll do the transaction.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
I don't know where my debit card is right now.
It's okay. No worries. Okay. Listen, you take care of yourself and know you're loved, okay?
Okay. Well, I love you and the Horn family very much. And I appreciate all the support I can get.
You have it.
I'll talk to you soon.
You have it pressed down and shaken together, my friend. You stay safe.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
the relationships that happen on this program. I have tears in my eyes. And so, you know, best thoughts, fondest thinkings for our friend Ken up in Erie. I love hearing from him. I love hearing from you all. And I'm just, what he just did took courage. And I applaud that. So, thank you, Ken, for meeting Ralph's challenge. I had a note from, and yes, Lou in PA, perchance did you receive a book? I did. And I will spend probably the weekend with it. Thank you, Lou. And a note coming in from Charlene in Rogues Island. For March the 31st, the Trans Day of Visibility, a challenge. Hi, Robin. Hi, Charlene. Offering a $250 challenge, and if it's met tonight, we got an hour and a half to do this, y'all. If it's met tonight, I'll add $50 more. So 25 people at $10, 10 people at $25, so any combination of fives, ones, there's no such thing as small. If we can raise up $250, courtesy of Charlene, dig this. We will be done with March's fundraising a day ahead of time, and we will be able to have tomorrow a fundraising free Friday on the front porch. And that'll be fantastic. So the clock is ticking. We have about an hour and 23 minutes to see if we can pull together $250. And that will finish off funding for the month of March. And we will have a Thorn in the Side Thursday community-made miracle. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so much. And so all the lines are open if you've got something you want to say or a story you want to bring to the fore. I saw this one and I'm not going to say it made me laugh. It's a sign of the times. I never thought I would find myself defending. Oh, there's a lot of things I never thought I'd find myself doing. Let's not list them. But one of them is I never thought I would find myself defending Chuck Todd. Monumental man of mediocrity. But here I am. He actually had the courage on Meet the Press this past Sunday to excoriate the suits at NBC for hiring that serial liar, Ronna Romney McDaniel. And now, a couple of nights ago, I guess. Yesterday. Nitwit Nero called for his defenestration. Nitwit Nero ran to his rattle trap social media site, Tripe Social, and triped at 12:31 a.m. because he has trouble sleeping. It reminds me of what Hamlet said, except there's no comparison between the prince of the tormented prince of Denmark and the tortious dense of Magaloco. But he has trouble sleeping. Hamlet said, "I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space, were it not that I have bad dreams. You ever wonder what Nitwit Nero's dreams are like? An endless cacophony of his nasty old Klansman daddy screaming at him and telling him what a loser he is. What a schmuck. How incompetent he is. Combined with his gross old mammy, the woman who illegally immigrated to America on a vacation visa, only to go to work for the man who would become Trump's nasty-ass daddy as a maid, and then he fucked and married the help. Yeah, his mama, his daddy shrieking at him about what a complete failure he is, while his mother is screaming, "Donnie, you have to go party in the party. You're 6 years old. You can't be pooping in your pants no more. Ah, what's wrong with you?" And Fred Trump saying, "I'll tell you what's wrong with him. I married a woman who came from a gene pool on an island in Scotland that was little more than a mud puddle." So he was still up at 12:31 a.m. when he triped on Tripe Social.
"What boss or executive would allow a man or woman, in this case Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd, who aspired for dismal performance coupled with horrendous television ratings, to publicly scold them as to their weakness and stupidity in hiring Ronna McDaniel?"
Now, see, Trump had been trashing Ronna McDaniel for quite a while because he forced her out the door at the Republican National Clavern in favor of his daughter-in-law,
Lara. Lara, yeah, she's the one that stayed married to one of my sons. Unlike my oldest son, he's out there dating some woman whose last name is Gargoyle. Yeah. But Lara stayed loyal. And she's going to be head of the RNC, and she's going to send me all the money that all the MAGA rubes send to the RNC. Actually,
he triped further,
they should be scolded for hiring Sleepy for Meet the Fake Press and keeping him on so long, despite his poor performing skills, bad ratings, and bias.
This, of course, is on the heels of back when NBC reported his meeting with the man so brilliantly played on SNL by John Goodman, Rex Tillerson, who said, "Once I was the most powerful corporate head in the entire world, and the next day I'm getting fired by a man who sells meat through the mail." And along the way said that Rex Tillerson, having called him a moron, well, last fall, Nitwit Nero said he would
investigate MSNBC for their one-sided vicious coverage and country-threatening treason,
and said he would revoke their charter, which doesn't exist. But the spirochetes shrieking each to each inside his otherwise empty head do.
"The sick degenerates over at MSDNC are really running NBC, and there seems nothing Chairman Brian Roberts can do about it. Watching Chuck Todd, of all people, viciously giving Roberts a piece of his small mind and then berating him for hiring Ronna without his or the other lunatic's approval was just a step too far. Brian's great father would have fired Chuck Todd and all the rest of those losers on the spot. Perhaps Brian still will."
And, of course, this is after, previously, at the pleading of Nancy Mensa of South Carolina stan, having sued ABC in a case that's going to get bounced out and hopefully will cost him all of ABC's lawyer fees. And they only hire the most expensive lawyers. But there are still repercussions from the hiring of Ronna Romney McDaniel. Several different outlets reporting that there's ongoing backlash at the Peacock Network. And according to the Washington Post, the suits at NBC and MSNBC really busted their ass to recruit and hire and support the serial liar, Ronna Romney McDaniel. And speaking, well, with Nitwit Nero hollering for the
firing of Chuck Todd.
Well, over at CNN, Oliver Darcy said, what's Brian Roberts going to do? The Comcast boss is watching an unceasing five-alarm fire rage at 30 Rock, scarring the reputation of NBC News and threatening to consume multiple parts of the Caesar Condi-run NBC Universal News Group. And people are hollering for heads to roll. Oliver Darcy went on and said, Condi has lost control of his organization, prompting industry insiders to wonder how he continues to remain in his role as chairman of the NBC News Group. In the words of one veteran media executive I spoke to Wednesday, it's inconceivable that he should. Because, as Darcy said, Condi has hosed gasoline onto the scandal. And Dylan Byers at Puck said, quote, bringing McDaniel to 30 Rock had been part of a nearly two-month-long effort that was spearheaded by Budoff Brown and her boss, NBC News President Rebecca Blumenstein, with buy-in from Condi and his deputies at both NBC News and MSNBC. Rashida Jones, the president of MSNBC, was very interested in having McDaniel appear as a contributor on her network as well. And so, lo and behold, having been caught engaging in a manifest fuck-up, Byers went on to say, on Sunday, Budoff Brown reached out to McDaniel's aide and former chief of staff at the RNC, Richard Walters, to see if there were any friends or colleagues who could speak up on her behalf. And then she went so far as to attack her own talent. The two sides also discussed having these folks call attention to what they saw as a double standard. After all, this was the same network that was turning Psaki, Jen Psaki, a former Biden White House press secretary, into a Maddow-adjacent primetime star. Walters later assured Budoff Brown that they'd been able to advance conservative pushback on the social media against Todd specifically, and that this might give NBC News some cover, for which Budoff Brown thanked him. And within 24 hours of all of this, 48 hours of all of this, lo and behold, you get the aforementioned Tripe Social post at 12:31 a.m. With all of that in mind, CNN said staffers inside NBC News are enraged at the fact that an executive would have engaged in such behavior. Over at Mark Jacobs, who used to be the editor of the Chicago Tribune and is now an analyst of politics and media, said that Jones and Blumenstein and Budoff Brown should outright be fired. Jennifer Schultze, a media critic and formerly at the Chicago Sun-Times, an executive producer, a WGN news director, and adjunct college professor of journalism, said, it's like the Hunger Games at NBC News. Every day, new horrible stories of journalism and corporate malpractice. Every single one of these managers must go. And apparently the whole filthy mess even went so far as to befoul the NBC News lead anchor, Lester Holt. Ms. Schultz saying, it's really troubling. Journalists should not be helping do business deals with politicians or political organizations. We need full disclosure on his role, what he promised in exchange for securing the debate, etc. McDaniel's relationship with top NBC executives began last fall, according to people familiar with what took place. NBC was determined to secure a Republican primary debate, repeatedly talking to RNC officials about their chances and even sending star anchor Lester Holt to Washington for a pitch meeting at RNC headquarters. Can you imagine Chet Huntley or David Brinkley at NBC ever going to the being sent to the RNC to see if maybe, oh, I don't know, Haldeman or Ehrlichman would like to have a job with them? Because this is that. This is that level of perfidy. Can you imagine Bill Paley, and having just gotten done watching Capote versus the Swans, that dude was a piece of shit. But can you imagine Bill Paley saying, hey, Cronkite, yeah, get over there to RNC headquarters and see what we can do to make life better for Richard Nixon. Ms. Schultz went on and said, every NBC News exec who thought hiring a reputed liar and phony elector co-conspirator needs to resign or be fired, because that's exactly what Ronna Romney McDaniel is and was. She was up to her chinny chin chin in the fake elector scheme in Michigan. Ms. Schultz went on and said the NBC News managers who recruited and signed an election denier should be out the door, too. Not only was it downright offensive to hire Ronna, it was journalism and corporate malpractice. A former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and by the way, former President Obama and former President Clinton and President Biden, will and probably are, even as we speak, at a soiree in New York City this evening to boost fundraising for President Biden, whose fundraising edge and his cash on hand edge over Nitwit Nero right now is something in the neighborhood of $40 million, because the Republican Party is enthralled to a dude who won't campaign but instead likes to go to one of his tacky bedbug infested golf motels and receive a trophy for club champion. God, the Biden team even burned him to the ground for that. Well, that's quite an accomplishment, Donald. But Dan Pfeiffer, who worked for Obama, said, NBC's ill-fated decision to hire Ronna Romney McDaniel, I'm always going to throw the Romney in there just to make sure nobody forgets, is a story of a media outlet unwilling to accept the ways Trump changed politics, but it's also one of the best arguments for Dems' need to build our media ecosystem ASAP. Hey, Dan, it's me over here. Only been helping, been doing some Democratic media ecosystem for about more than two damn decades. Well, you know what? They never listened. But this community did. And this community has created this. And though we don't have Joe Rogaine numbers, I don't want the kind of people who listen to Joe Rogaine. We also don't have Benny Drywife Shapiro numbers.
I don't want those numbers either. I mean, granted, I would like to re-excavate the Olympic-sized pancreas-shaped swimming pool and get the hangar rebuilt and get the Gulfstream 5 and the Maybach back, but baby steps, y'all. And for now, that just means finding $250 between now and an hour and 5 minutes from now. Because of Charlene in Rogues Island offering up that aforementioned challenge. The March 31st Trans Day of Visibility Challenge. Thank you, Charlene. And it's good through the end of the program. And Charlene, if it's okay for me to say so, it's good for the overnight crew too, but we really need to knock it out so that we can just happily end the month of March with a fundraising free Friday on the front porch. So thank you in advance if that's possible. Dan Pfeiffer made some good points, though, in his newsletter. He said that the hiring of Ronna Romney McDaniel proves that the for-profit media, quote, is yet to accept the reality that this is not a normal election between a Republican and a Democrat. An industry that prizes objectivity above all else, which I would argue is in name only, is incapable of accurately covering an election where one candidate is a normal politician and the other is an insurrectionist. Many in the media would rather stumble into autocracy than take a side. Michelangelo Signorile said, "We couldn't have asked for a better situation to shine a bright light on the corruption of the corporate media and its impulse to legitimize MAGA extremism and lawbreakers for profit than NBC's hiring of former RNC chair, election denier, and Trump enabler Ronna Romney McDaniel." Again, I'm adding the Romney. I think Dan Pfeiffer really, really nailed it, though, with what he said. You cannot do a good, objectively journalistic job covering an election saying that where your model is that this is just another presidential election. You know, this is just Rutherford B. Hayes versus Samuel Tilden. Nothing to see here. You know, this is just Adlai Stevenson versus Dwight Eisenhower. No biggie. But I don't think in this era that electronic journalism is capable of living up to the task. Because there's too much money at stake. And the way the suits see it, well, the suits look at the money the way a bookie looks at the money. Whatever the odds are in any given wager, a bookie is only successful when they get the money right. When you basically got the same a 50-50 split between people taking the betting with the spread versus those betting against it. Otherwise, bloodbaths can ensue. And in this case, the bloodbath is the risk of having advertisers be mean to you and not bringing in revenues because they objectively report from a news division on the fact that Nitwit Nero wants to end democracy as we know it. And as Ralph's pointed out,
Keith Olbermann thinks some of the suits at NBC will be fired soon. Well, from his lips to God's ear. But I don't even know if that's possible anymore. It would at least, however, create the appearance of propriety. But the fear is that it is only an appearance. Okay, we are in the third hour of the program. Officially. Anything you want to talk about? Feel free to ring in. We've talked a lot on this program about what is commonly referred to as the two-tiered system of justice in this country. Even Jehoshaphat this morning finally said what has needed to be said and has been said by others long before. They were discussing the threats made by Nitwit Nero against the daughter of a sitting judge, Judge Juan Merchan in Manhattan. At one point he said, And he prefaced it with the usual, "I'm just a simple country lawyer" line. And then he said, I practiced law for a little while before I went to Congress. And he said, "I promise you, if anybody in my district, in my former district, there in the panhandle of Florida, if anyone had done what Donald Trump did, a judge would stick him in jail and give him a couple of days there to think about what he'd done." And he wasn't wrong. Because if you go there was some defense attorney who said, "Listen," and I was thinking the same thing, as even if it is true that the daughter of a sitting judge posted a meme of Trump behind bars, even if it's true, you have a means of addressing it. There are rules regarding such things, laws regarding such things. And what you do is, if you're aggrieved, you pick up the phone, you, the client, pick up the phone, and you call your lawyer and you say,
"Hey, the judge's daughter just posted a meme of me behind bars.
And the judge, in turn, takes it to the court, and it gets addressed. And if it doesn't work there, you can take it to the whatever the state or federal office is that oversees judicial ethics. But the expert there this morning said, what you don't do is run screaming to your frothing at the mouth, rabid base on social media. My words here, and engage in stochastic terrorism against her and against the judge. And incident to all of this is the fact that Judge Mershon's daughter didn't post the photo, the meme, the graphic, whatever. Which is exactly what Nero did. I wonder if, given the latitude that Arthur and Goron afforded to Orange Julius Geezer, I wonder if Judge Mershon will be so forgiving. Because he entered a gag order against Nitwit Nero, but absent from that was, it enjoined threats or mentions of any counsel in the case or members of their family. But it did not address slurs, libels, stochastic terrorism directed specifically against the judge or his family. It remains to be seen. A reminder or an observation coming from Randy Radar. John Eastman was just disbarred. Is that in all states or just one? Well, it all depends on who the judge was. He's disbarred wherever he was disbarred. Relative to his licensure status. And this is in California. He was disbarred in California. California State Bar Judge Yvette Rowland said this week that John Eastman should be disbarred for, quote, false and misleading statements about alleged election crimes. He, of course, said, I'll appeal. But Judge Rowland said in a 128-page decision, in view of the circumstances surrounding Eastman's misconduct and balancing the aggravation and mitigation, the court recommends that Eastman be disbarred. Now, remember, John Eastman was a former law professor. And he's the one who cooked up the cockamamie fake electors scheme that was then advanced by people like Jenna Ellis and Squidney Powell, the Kraken lawyer. MAGA, many attorneys getting attorneys. But even after the order was entered, well, John Eastman, sitting before a banner of the Claremont Institute, another right-wing tax-exempt grift, went over to Real America's Voice, and the show hosted by the man with the biggest, emptiest head and the tiniest face in America. I mean, a forehead you could screen drive-in movies on. I'm talking about Charlie Kirk of Toilet Paper USA. And proceeded to pogo stick up onto the cross.
Pow.
After the ad's over. Thank you so much to Cecilia. Cecilia got us started on Charlene's March 31st Trans Day of Visibility Challenge. Thank you so much, Cecilia. We are down to $226 on that challenge. If we can raise $226 in the next 50 minutes. Tall order, but I hope we can get there. We'll be done with fundraising for the month of March. And that will be such a relief. Thank you, Cecilia. Thank you so much. It'll be great if we can. $226 to go. And now, back to the man with the tiny face and giant head and the election conspirator, John Eastman.
The judge basically said he should be disbarred because he showed no remorse. Well, I don't show remorse, and I don't bend my knee to when the government is making false claims that the election was perfect and there's nothing to see here. There was a lot to see here, and the more people look at it, the more devastatingly bad it looks.
No, it doesn't. Lots of people have looked at it, you fucking grifter. And how is he still a senior fellow at the Claremont Institute? Well, because once you get your foot in the door at a right-wing grift, you pretty much keep your foot in the door to right-wing grift. You know, Jesus, at least that TV network had the common decency to take Josh Duggar off the air after they found out he was Duggar-buggering his sister. Not so much the Claremont Institute, when a guy turns out to be an active insurrectionist.
And so that's why we're fighting. This is not George Orwell's 1984, at least not yet. When the government tells us 2 + 2 = 5, bend the knee and agree with that.
Phil, any lawyer.
I love the fact that the man with the tiny face had to answer the equation for John Eastman. He said 2 + 2 = 5, and Charlie Kirk says 5. And I thought I was ciphering challenge.
From representing election claims in the future. That's what this is all about. This is a show trial to say we will strip you of your law license if you represent a client who has a constitutional right to ask questions about an election.
Now, that's right. That's right. And they, you know, they've said it publicly that that's what their goal is.
Remember, this is the asshole who told Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek to do something as the magisterial president of the Senate of the United States that had never been done in the entire history of the Republic and refused to certify the Electoral College vote. Even in the Rutherford B. Hayes Samuel Tilden election that got thrown into the Congress, that didn't happen.
And it's working. And what that means is election fraud and illegality in the future will go unchallenged. I mean, the last break on what's been going on we had was lawyer. This is, by the way, this is one of the reasons why Shakespeare writes that famous line about the first thing we do, we kill all the lawyers.
No, it's fucking not. Now you're in my bailiwick, bitch. Shakespeare puts that line in the mouths of conspirators seeking to overturn the government. That line, the first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers, is put in the mouth of a villain. I've seen that on T-shirts, and it's like, didn't read the play, did you? Neither did John.
It's not because they didn't like lawyers. It's the folks that were trying to take over the government knew that they had to get rid of the lawyers because the lawyers stood in the way of these kind of things. And the lawyers stand in the way of election illegality. It's our duty to try and raise questions about illegality. Because, look, our Declaration of Independence is founded on the consent of the governed, our whole government. The consent...
This guy was a law professor, okay? A law professor.
And he had, and he's so goddamn dumb that he cites the Declaration of Independence as law? I wouldn't trust this fucker to do a red car, blue car, rear-ender plaintiff's case. You know, where liability isn't in question and all you got to do is establish damages and multiply it by three and send it to the insurance company, for fuck's sake. Sorry. Are any of these right-wing lawyers worth a damn? Again, Jenna Ellis. Squidney Powell, the Kraken lawyer. This fucking clown. Jeffrey Clark. A nobody inside the DOJ who wanted to mount a coup against, of all people, Bill Pelham barred a prosecution who bailed out on January 6th because he actually likes his not Ivy League law degree. And had a real hankering to hang on to it. This will be helpful. Billable Rick with a note. The disbarment of John Eastman by the California State Bar. The next step for John Eastman to challenge his disbarment is to appeal to the California Supreme Court, which reviews all disbarments determined by the California State Bar. If the California Supreme Court affirms Eastman's disbarment, then he likely won't be able to practice law anywhere in the United States, since disbarments in one state are generally treated with reciprocity by other states. Yeah, FYI, the Claremont Institute is in East L.A. County, not Orange County. Further FYI, was Charlie Kirk arrested for jacking off in public, you know, just asking questions, off in public at the Claremont Institute? I think he would be arrestable anywhere he opens up his mic when he's just asking questions.
And to the governed is manifested by how we conduct our elections. And if they are not conducted legally and fairly, we are no longer giving our consent. And we cease to be citizens in a self-governing republic. And we become subjects of a tyrannical government.
Tyranny! What a fuckwit. What a treasonous fuckwit. Damnation. And the funny thing is, if he had succeeded, John Eastman, the people would have had the right to be pissed off and to take action. I mean, I actually remember when this happened 24 years ago. When Dim Leader ran whining to the Supreme Court saying that he would be irreparably harmed by the continuing counting of the votes and that the vote count should be stopped so that he wouldn't lose the election to Al Gore. That was a stolen election by any metric. And the Republican army was there, and lo and behold, it's some of the same people that are still involved. Remember the Brooks Brothers riot at the election headquarters at Miami-Dade County? There's a graphic out there that shows the people in that mob of enraged white men. That shows the name of each person who was there. Subject line: well, business is jumping on down at the shop. Hi, gang, your old buddy Dave in the blind again to answer Ken's question. I can't crucify a dead man.
If he'd come to us a week earlier, I could have. I might have even started him on the new service for those who like to get flogged nearly to death before their trial. The flagellum service, where you have two, count them two, flogging technicians with leather straps and lead barbells at the end. These beautiful instruments of pain have little miniature United States capitals on them, just for the insurrectionists among us. Remember to get nailed in real good this Friday. Spots are filling up fast. We have only 300 slots available. As to employment opportunities at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium, we are searching for octopi who can wield hammers. Thanks again, your buddy, Dave, in the blind. Okay, Dave. I-N-R-I. I'm nailed right in. Well, some of this stuff is hilarious, were it not for the fact that it's so damned dangerous. Over there on the Rattle Trap vlog of the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. Oh, wait, let's do this first. The maggots with the John Eastman ruling out. The maggots are hopping up and down and flinging poo because that's what they do. That's the sum total of an extent of their ability. Well, marginal trailer queen, Sporkfoot, declared to Real America's Voice, "Outrageous! He's one of the best attorneys in the United States, perhaps in history." Sporkfoot, can I remind you that James Madison was a lawyer? Alexander Hamilton was a lawyer. Aaron Burr was a lawyer. Aaron Burr was accused of treason, and he didn't do a tenth of the shit this motherfucker did. And by the way, Judge Yvette Roland found Eastman culpable for 10 out of the 11 charges with which he was accused. Judge Roland saying, "His wrongdoing is substantially aggravated by his multiple offenses, lack of candor, and indifference. Given the serious and extensive nature of Eastman's unethical actions, the most severe available professional sanction is warranted to protect the public and preserve the public confidence in the legal system." On the other hand, also speaking to the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, a former Supreme Court clerk named Maggot Mike Davis said, "As a very serious attorney, it is obscene that they are disbarring John Eastman for zealously representing his client. When President Trump is back in the White House, his Justice Department must open a criminal probe." Some clown named Mark Mendlovitz, who claims leftism is a cult, said, "John Eastman, who was ruled to be disbarred on Wednesday by California Kangaroo Court Judge Yvette Roland, is yet another temporary casualty of lawfare." God, they found a new word, and they're going to flog it to pieces. "Lawfare by a fascist left that will stop at nothing to try to punish everyone involved with President Trump." No, dipshit, only the ones who committed crimes. "I predict this outrageous overreach against one of America's sharpest legal minds will eventually be overturned at a higher level and set a precedent that will come back to bite the Trump deranged left." There's only one problem. As Billable Rick explained to us, it will be reviewed by the Supreme Court of California. And it'll stop there. Oh, John Eastman will bark and grunt and hoot and moan and scream and screech and carry on. "I'm taking this to the Supreme Court." But you don't get to just take shit to the Supreme Court. There's that one Warner Brothers cartoon where Bugs has a legal issue with Yosemite Sam Rosenbaum. Thank you, Ron. Ron informing me the other night that Yosemite Sam actually had a last name and it was Rosenbaum. You can't make this shit up. Bug says, yeah, I'll take this to the highest court in the land. And the next scene shows him climbing a winding trail up a mountain with just nothing but air, thousands of feet of air on either side of the trail. And along the way, the camera pans into Bugs, and he says, whew, maybe I should have taken this case to a lower court. Y'all take it to the highest court in the land, John Eastman, Bugs Bunny. I will not insult Bugs Bunny that way. Hey, thank you, Rob. Rob just got us down to $176 to go on Charlene's March 31st Trans Day of Visibility Challenge. Thank you, Rob, so much. We got 34 minutes to bring it to meet that challenge, which will end fundraising for the month of March. And let me pay badly needed to be paid bills. Fingers crossed, y'all. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Cynthia. Or Cecilia. I'm sorry. Cecilia. Thank you, Cecilia. Fingers crossed. Now, I mentioned the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. It's always hilarious when a man who actually supports fascism calls other people Nazis. You can't make this shit up. There was a hearing in Fulton County today, Georgia, where Steve Sadow said that Nitwit Nero shouldn't be allowed to be prosecuted for election interference and RICO because of his First Amendment right to free speech. Fonnie Willis's prosecutorial team didn't agree. And earlier this afternoon, when Stevie Three Shirts, the man who should already be behind bars for contempt of Congress, having been convicted but given a pass by, was it Trevor McFadden? He was the asshole we were talking about day before yesterday. Wow. The man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells knows damned well who's a Nazi and who ain't. Because, you know, takes one to know one. One of these days, maybe justice will find Bannon, too. Sure would be nice.
By the very nature of that job, there's
a hearing going on. You can bring that down, Denver. Thank you. There's a hearing going on. I'm using this as a example. There's a hearing going on right now in Georgia on the whole Fonnie Willis situation and about different defendants and also about President Trump and Parvis case. In courtrooms across the country, this concept of lawfare is,
told you,
I believe, in their mind, they think, is probably the only way they can defeat us.
They chew on that word lawfare like a junkyard dog with a toxic Chinese pig ear chew toy. Lawfare! See, it's cute. It's like warfare, only with law, and it's being waged against poor President Trump. See what we did there? Lawfare. Aren't we clever? No, kind anonymous internet friend. Yes, Cat's challenge is over. Right now we have Charlene's challenge for Trans Day of Visibility, and what and if you do that, we will be down to $150. Our kind anonymous internet friend said, I'll pledge $26. That gets us down to $150. And, Christopher, hey, thank you. I'll help with that. Come on, y'all. Let's knock this out, says Christopher. And so now we are now down to $124 and 30 minutes to go. $124 and 30 minutes to go. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. So back to the lawfare.
By taking out some of our top people, whether it's Rudy Giuliani, whether it's Jeff Clark. Jeff Clark's over in a courtroom right now in Washington, D.C., being disbarred. The great John Eastman, one of the greatest constitutional thinkers we have, is now up for disbarment, and we followed it. This audience watched it for 32 days. You saw that it was like Nazi judges, it was like a show trial in Moscow, just like what's happening to President Trump up in New York. This is the main, because remember, most of these lawyers are all left-wing progressive Democrats. The law schools are all progressive Democrats. All the half the judge, three quarters of the judges.
That's going to come as a complete surprise to the lawyers who came, and I know one. She's a friend of mine who came out of the the fat dead Tony School of Law at George Mason University. They're known for turning out entire cadres of liberal leftist Nazi Stalinist judges. Oh, my aching. The stupid. It hurts us. Because in the world of Stevie Three Shirts, it's not even remotely possible. Yes, it is. He knows exactly what's going on. But he has to keep Nitwit Nero in his mouth in the desperate hope that Nitwit Nero will find his way, will galumph his way to the White House again before his brain turns to cream of mushroom soup. Well, I've just put the entire Horn Family Community Congregation off the idea of ever consuming cream of mushroom soup again, including your humble hostess. But he's got to keep Trump in his mouth in hopes of getting another pardon. His entire babbling, and I can't imagine having to do this. I mean, this is the political equivalent of going astraddle the road and just taking whoever will leave the money on the nightstand. And that's what the man who looks like rancid hot dog water does. He has to get on every day, and no matter how ridiculous, no matter how patently illegal, no matter how filthy, how dirty, how ugly, how unconstitutional, how un-American, he has to say that it's the right thing to do. Because for some reason or another, Stevie Three Shirts is absolutely mortified at the prospect. And I guess we all would be, but he's already seen Peter Navarro, who didn't have a good maggot judge and instead had a competent one, send Peter Navarro off to the cooler, where Peter Navarro is now dragging his little tin cup across the bar saying, "Let me out, you filthy screws!" And Stevie Three Shirts is terrified. And of course, the whole reason he should be in jail is because he committed contempt of Congress, because he maintained the old mob doctrine of omerta. Of not testifying against the mob, and particularly not against Don Corleone. If I had even a scintillaeurus, even an iota of sympathy for that poor grub, that wealthy, grubby fascist man, I think it was pretty awful having to do what he has to do every day. Women and men and non-binary people who engage in sex work without having been trafficked into it are more honorable than him. Well, thank you, Darlene, and thank you, Raymond. Y'all, we are fully funded for the month of March. And that is tremendous. And Charlene's challenge, the March 31st Transgender Day of Visibility Challenge, has been met. Okie dokie, I need to look that up. Herman says the Yosemite Sam cartoon you are referring to is called The Fair-Haired Hare from 1951. Thank you, Herman, for serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Yosemite Sam Rosenbaum Research Department. The things I learn here. Ralph says, woohoo! I agree, and that's another woohoo for this thorn in the side Thursday community-made miracle. And Charlene says, hooray, Horn family, hooray! Hooray, Charlene, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for the subject of your challenge. That means a great deal to me. And to a number of other members of the Horn family community congregation. Thank you. You know, Sunday also being Easter, I'm wearing white. Stop that, Roxanne. We gotta get finished with. God, I so wish we could be finished with Stevie Three Shirts. I'm sorry, Brendan. Three Shirts. The image of Stevie Three Shirt smells of three-day-old hot dog water needs to keep the orange fecal stain in his mouth has put me off mushrooms forever. Peace, lady. Brandon. Oh, I didn't even realize it. You know, I wasn't thinking about Stormy Daniels and the mushroom at the same time I said mushroom soup. God, it's gotten grosser, Brendan. Randy Radar. Oh, come on! Cream of mushroom soup goes great with lily livers. Lily livers, that's probably a Yosemite Sam reference, too. Jesus. Please, let's finish this clip.
This is what they're trying to use against you, and this is what you have to break. And look, there's nothing more I hate than following trials like I'm doing it. I'm not a lawyer. I made a conscious decision as a young man. No, I'll go get an MBA because I don't want to be a lawyer, right? However, when you talk about the fight to take your country back, they have weaponized the law. Hello, the Bolsheviks and the Nazis knew what they were doing about crushing free people or crushing people.
This guy's still doing the same shit, equating communism and with fascism. Then why you disheveled creep, did they fight? Why did Operation Barbarossa even happen? Because the commies fought the Nazis, and the commies finally won because the forces of freedom, democracy, goodness, and decency opened a second front against Germany, which allowed, among other things, the Russian forces to break out of Stalingrad. Because Hitler had to divert forces to defend the Atlantic Wall, which they didn't. I mean, that's a little oversimplistic, but here we are. And all these decades later, the maggots, the teabaggers, the Republicans still don't understand the difference between fascism, which, by the way, Stevie Three Shirts supports, you know, the fascist institute in an old monastery in Italy? Anybody? Bueller? Oh, he knows what he's doing. He's just playing the rubes.
And that's what they used. It was actually the tip of the spear for a long time. That is what's going on in this nation. Mike Davis joins me. Mike, I realize you got a bolt, and I got a bunch of things to roll through. I got Eastman and Clark's disbarment, right? I've got all the stuff happening to Trump and the gag order. And then I've got this Kerry Lake situation out in Arizona. They're hitting this. I normally say we have a 30-front war on everything against the radical left. It's right now kind of the subset of lawfare is like a 30-front war because it's all over the country in every jurisdiction and every courthouse right now. Mike Davis.
Here's the funny thing. We're not going to hear from Mike Davis. I already read you the quote. But he's sitting in front of a background screen, and I'm trying to read what it says. The Something Project, but their logo is a capital A, the number 3, and a capital P. But the first thing that came to mind when I saw that was, and it's in red, by the way, son of a gun. That looks like Cyrillic. I forget what the Cyrillic letter that looks like the numeral 3 is, but it looks like, you know, A, whatever that letter is, followed by P, which is, you know, R in Russian and other Slavic tongues that rely on the Cyrillic alphabet. And this is, you know, this is the clown we had the quote from earlier. I'm not going to go back to it, but there's a certain irony in him sitting in front of something that looks like it's written in Russian. The goddess of irony owns them all. Nazi judges. And Lou with a note. I'll say, and you're absolutely right, Stalingrad was 42-43, but the Allies landed in France in June 44, though we had already taken North Africa and Italy. Kind of stalled at Monte Cassino, if I recall correctly. But Stalin had insisted, where, at Tehran, Lou? That the UK and the United States put pressure on Hitler's fortress Europa and provide some relief on the Eastern Front. Of course, we were also providing with tanks and airplanes and feeding their army and to the extent that they were fed. If you've never seen it, the movie, no, it's a film. The film Enemy at the Gates, which deals with a battle between two snipers at Stalingrad. It's a really good movie. Bob Hoskins playing Khrushchev. Just Rachel Weisz as the Russian sniper, if I recall correctly. Damn good movie. But we've got a little more stupid. We've got a little more program left. And this is some of these are just too good. We had Tiny Face, Big Head earlier. displaying his massive intellect. I'm being sarcastic. And explaining his fascination with the precious little fetuses, with a hyperpathetical on burning buildings and babies. I don't know why they always have to go, well, whatever.
Where there's a burning building, right, and you have 10 fertilized embryos and 3 live babies, and it's burning, and you only have an option to choose one, which one are you saving?
That's a tough question. I mean, first of all, that's a very – depends if the embryos will ever be used.
By the way, at this point in time, Charlie Kirk is using the I don't know. He's at some sort of public event outdoors, and he's using the old Steven Crowder "Prove Me Wrong" banner. So did you get the premise of the question? I mean, these people go out in public like this.
Where there's a burning building, right, and you have 10 fertilized embryos and 3 live babies, and it's burning, and you only have an option to choose one, which one are you saving?
That's a tough question. I mean, first of all, that's a very – depends if the embryos will ever be used. That's the better question. Oh, well. So if you can guarantee the embryos will then be – used into full fertilization, then you, to be consistent, you would have to save the 10 embryos. Okay. If they're fully fertilized, then will be used, yes. But okay. The 3 babies have already gone through the entire gestational period, survived potential miscarriages, other side of, you know, birth-related issues. But that's a fair and very good question that, you know, to be principled, you have to answer it
sure,
a certain
sure.
way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have to be fair and principled. You have to answer it a certain way. Does Big Head Tiny Face even understand how in vitro fertilization works? Does he even remotely comprehend that even when medical science implants fertilized embryos in a uterus, that they don't always take? That the potential mother to be can still reject them and just have a period? Imagine that being the certain way he feels like. So 10 fertilized embryos, 9 of which may wind up on a pad or in a toilet, but he's going to let 3 live infants be immolated in a fire. Thank God this is a hypothetical. But the fact of the matter is, it's not that hypothetical if we're talking about how the maggots actually ruminate. You'll notice I deliberately did not use the word think. Because while Big Head Tiny Face, Little Face, Dick Tracy villain, Big Head Little Face wants to pretend that he's engaging in some sort of moral, ethical search, he's just demonstrating the fact that he is, as, and this is a term that we coined here years and years ago, a fetus fetishist. Those 3 living babies in that hypothetical are hypothetically already loved. They're already alive. Those 10 clusters of 5 cells aggregate 50 cells, even I can do that multiplication, are not alive. Now I'm reminded of the opinion of that theocrat mullah chief justice of the Alabama Supreme Court who said, where are the fetuses, or where are the embryos?
slowly died.
Good.
Lou adding, that thing that looks like a 3 equals yah. And yes, I've seen Animate the Gates. I have a poster of a female sniper on my wall. The invasion of Italy pulled some SS out of Kursk. Our lend lease of trucks and boats and spam was a big deal. Nope, no apologies necessary, Lou. Out walking the dogs are tough to type. I got it. And Clarence with a note. Watch the Hitler channel. That's where you'll get all the info about the Nazi communist struggle. All Hitler, all the time. Those were the earliest days of A&E, weren't they, Clarence? So even though Big Head Little Face is plenty stupid, we still have a kicker. Because, well, Mike Lindell is still among the quick. Mr. Meth Head was recently evicted from the Mr. Meth Pillow warehouse by the owner of said warehouse up in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He went on to say that he didn't pay his rent at the warehouse. Wait for it. Because he wanted to make things easier on his landlord. But we barely scratched the surface. What with it being Holy Week and everything. Holy crap, I can't believe this man is this stupid. The former crack addict, and perhaps once in future, and still crack addict, Mike Lindell. I don't know. Just asking questions. It recently opined about what it would mean if he can't abolish voting machines. You know, I'm so old, I remember the voting machine debate back when we said, you know, you really need a paper trail with these things, and it's probably not a great idea when these things flip votes on the video game screen. And we were crazy back then, according to the maggots. But we finally get some reforms that make them slightly more reliable. Oh, Lou's saying, the Soviets liked our boots and Chevys, but they put up with spam. Yeah, but somebody else loved the spam, and that was folks in Hawaii. Spam is beloved in Hawaii to this day. Tends to give me indigestion. But no, bad things apparently, or at least not great things, you know, in terms of Jeebus coming back and his holy roles and whatnot, are definitely going to happen if Mike Lindell cannot complete his mission. Take it away, Mr. Meth Pillow.
The Halderman, this expert, he hacked into the machine right in front of her, right in front of the judge in 3 minutes and flipped all these votes. And you'd think that would be the number one story in the world, but the only way people heard about it was all through these new social media platforms and stuff, because what's happened in our country, and I told our real president this, here's a bucket. Call this the bucket of common sense. Take all politics. Don't call it Democrat, Republican. Take that all out of there. Everybody is jumping into this bucket of common sense. And why? It's more because of all the bad things that are going on, where people are jumping in this bucket. It's kind of like the Jesus Christ bucket. You're jumping in. People don't look to Jesus when things are going bad.
The Jesus Christ bucket? Jesus Christ, what a bucket. Jesus, look at the time.
I mean, when things are going good. They look for Jesus when things are going bad. They're praying and they're jumping in this bucket and they never get out. So we're in the greatest revival.
And then they jump in this bucket, and they can only get one foot in it, and then they know they have to march uphill. And it makes it really difficult, y'all.
History for Jesus Christ. That's a beautiful thing.
Oh, for Jesus Christ.
People, we're in a win-win situation. If everything I'm fighting for, if we don't save our country, it's the end times. We all go to heaven as believers. It's a win-win. Everybody's got to embrace it.
Dude, run a warm bath. Jesus is waiting.
In the greatest time to be alive. And when people earlier in the show, when I said, people come up to me all the time and say, Mike, this doesn't feel like grace. I prayed and this didn't happen. And this.
Right. See, when they walk up, to, when the imaginary perfect strangers walk up to Mr. Mythpillow, they say, Mike, because they can't say, sir, because the only people you can say, sir, to is, of course, Orange Julius Caesar.
This didn't happen. And I said, oh, but it is grace. It's just evil wants that. That's why they're attacking me. That's why they're still attacking me. In August, I came up with a plan. God gave me a download of a plan, and I announced it in August, this plan.
A download of a plan? Mr. Mythpillow, if you're downloading plans, I'm pretty sure they're not from the almighty creator of the universe. I'm thinking it's probably more like a Russian troll farm or a Macedonian bot factory or... hell, might even be Iranian or North Korean or
China.
And to secure our elections, and that they turned up the heat. They've attacked my pillow worse than they've ever been attacked. They've tried to attack me. This has been the worst attack. And obviously,
they've attacked my pillow worse than they've ever been attacked. Mike Lindell, are you woke? You just made the word pillow a singular noun and then referred to it with they. Have you told Emery and Marveline that they're sleeping on non-binary pillows? Well, y'all, it looks like we've gotten, I don't know what to tell you. It looks like the transgender agenda has finally gotten to Mr. Mythpillow. It's okay. It's visibility week, Mike. We see you. You're valid.
Obviously, it's not because I want to overturn the 2020 election. Donald Trump's well ahead.
Donald Shrimp? Oh, honey. It might be time to go back into recovery, honey.
In any poll to win the next election. So why is Mike Lindell still fighting, and why do they still care about what I say? They don't want these machines gone, everybody. They want these.
You can't handle the truth. You need me on that pillow.
Computers to stay in place. The Uniparty, deep state globalists, the evil that's out there. This is where it's at. There's no other reason that they would be attacking me now.
So let me get this straight. Okay, let me get this clear. Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, cut off your ads, stop running them, because they're part of the Democratic, Republican, Uniparty, deep state, and they're attacking your non-binary pillows. How much crack does it take to make your brain operate that way? Don't answer. I don't want anybody out there experimenting or nothing. And I'm not taking one for the team and finding out either. I can say, absolutely true, that I have never smoked crack. And this is not the time to start. But damn. Does he not have any family that loves him or cares about him or will take him to a forensic neurologist or a psychiatrist or just a meeting? Well, okay, that's it. We're done. If we were 30 minutes from the end of the program, I don't think I could do another story after that. So what an evening this has been. A thorn in the side Thursday, community made miracle. Brought to us by Charlene in Rogues Island in honor of the Transgender Day of Visibility. And answered by this community. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors, our challenge makers, the respondents to those challenges. We got another month of broadcasting coming because of y'all, month by month by month for over two decades. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Oh, yes. You're right. A reminder from Lou in PA. Y'all, he ain't gonna make it. Very good. Because it's true. It's just a matter of time. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Asa, by the way, pointing out with regard to the sous vide, please, please tell me Kat sent you a vacuum chamber. Please, sweet feathery baby Jesus. Yes, she did. I picked it up today. And, in fact, the sous vide was developed by the French. And what's the old adage about Italian cuisine? Asa asks. Everything the Italians know about cooking, they learned from the French. Well, if you take French in the medieval to modern sense, yeah. But remember, everything the Gauls learned about cooking, they learned from the Romans. That's probably a bit too much, but still. But remember, please, if you're a member of the podcast portion of the Horn Family Community Congregation, like each episode when you download it, please. And leave a comment. Really does help. By the way, sometime probably within this year, at Podbean alone, mind you, and this is a big deal because, you know, we haven't been with Podbean for 21 years. It's a much shorter span of time. But sometime in the next few months, we will cross the 750,000 downloads mark at Podbean. And that blows my mind. It's not Joe Rogan numbers. But wow, what a little community we have. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, Ben has served out literally billions of hours of progressive content and has never sent a bill. And he has borne that weight for over a quarter of a century. And now, on June the 1st, he will lay down that burden. And the White Rose Society, WhiteRoseSociety.org, will go dark. And I can never thank Ben Birch enough. And I told him so. But if there's anything you want to download from there, get it while you can. You've got April and May in which to do it. 61 days. 64 days, counting tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. Thank you, Ben. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Keep an eye out for it. If you're over 65, remember, you're supposed to get a booster 4 months after the last one. Not sure when the next one's coming out. If you're around the maggots, well, wear your mask, because They've never showed any compunction against spreading disease. Political, physical, spiritual, or mental. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. All these things are just great ways to keep from getting sick. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And, you know, if someone with a meth pillow over his face approaches you and says, well, you know, these machines are going to, these voter machines are going to usher in the rent, in the end times, and, well, we'll all just go to heaven anyway. Avoid Mr. Meth Pillow like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.